Fellow Australians, the end of the world is coming. It wasn't Y2K, it wasn't even the carbon price. It turns out that the Mayan calendar was true. While Australia's best and brightest at the CSIRO have not been able to confirm this, I'm confident in Triple J's prediction that the world is about to end. Whether the final blow comes from flesh-eating zombies, demonic hell beasts, or from the total triumph of K-pop. If you know one thing about me, it is this. I will always fight for you to the very end. And at least this means I won't have to do Q&A again. Good luck to you all.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and aeroplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid.
Let's go!
I am a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn world to the throne, knees, don't deserve your own knees, beat it up and not be blood, no strength.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the CreeperCast. It's like food for thought. If by food you mean low-grade heroin, and if by thought you mean the cold night sweats and nonstop shaking you get from it. Let's talk about the program. Coming up, it's the end of the world as we know it. Again. So we bring you two apocalyptic views that are sure to make you read more books, maybe even the Bible. First, it's Hillary Swank's masterpiece. I can't say that with a straight face. I'm sorry, I really can't. It is Hillary Swank's 2007's The Reaping. And to prove you just can't trust what's on TV anymore, we have The Signal, also from 2007. The Walking Dead goes on hiatus. ABC signs another summer sci-fi series. Try saying that 10 times fast. Mike gives his book review and Jeff's news. So pour yourself a glass of red water and take off that tinfoil hat. It's time for CreeperCast, episode 104. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the CreeperCast. I'm Jason, and with me again is Jeff and Mike. Mike has just finished his new one-man play, All the President's Men. It's basically him standing naked on stage, talking to the voices in his head, and an empty chair. Critics say it's his best work yet.
Come see it. Tip your waitress.
Yeah. Bring all your friends.
All right,
it's highly entertaining. Granted, it lasts about 8 hours, but
all you need is a naked mic to understand what All the President's Men was about. It's true.
Exactly.
You can't make these things up.
I'm not even going to get through the contact info, am I?
Hey, man, you're the one that started this, so.
I know, and I am to blame. To get a hold of us, give us a call at 503-454-6941. Or send us email at feedback@creepercast.com. And don't forget, if you go to our website at creepercast.com, you can also leave us voicemail there. Simply click on the little banner on the left that says leave feedback. Or just go to creepercast.com/feedback and you can leave it right there through your computer, through your headset, through your smartphone, into our SpeakPipe account. We also have the iTunes sweepstakes going on. Remember, go to creepercast.com/iTunes or creepercast.com/TWDiTunes. Leave us a review and hopefully 5 stars. And when we hit 25 reviews, we will put your name into the proverbial hat. Yes, that's right. With this episode, we're going Proverbs again. And
you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
And we will get you into the drawing to win your choice of any one thing out of the CreeperCast swag store, which you can check out at creepercast.com/swag.
And of course, now is the time to do this because we only have like a week and a half left at the, as of the time you're listening to this show.
I know. Then everyone dies.
Yeah, and then we're all gone. Thanks to the Mayans getting too lazy to make a calendar longer than 2,000 years long.
Also, we're on Stitcher. So if you're listening to us on iTunes and you have Stitcher, you can now listen to us on Stitcher. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. It's Stitcher, smart radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And now, the CreeperCast and the Walking Dead Week in Review. And with that, that is all the intro stuff. So what do you say we head into
a little bit more intro stuff really quickly? Here is the reason why we're talking about the end of the world a week before or 2 weeks before it actually happens is to prepare everybody. I mean, after all, we're not going to be here to tell you anything else about the end of the world. So this is our last chance.
But what if the world doesn't end? Then what will we talk about next time?
Then next time we will definitely talk about something.
Like actually, Christmas.
Yeah, we're getting into Christmas by then.
So you can have yourself a merry little slash wrist.
Slash wrist. Hey, I like that sound. I like to change things to that. Happy merry slash wrist. I love it.
All right, and now into our first film. Which is 2007's The Reaping. The plot of The Reaping. The girl from the fourth Karate Kid movie is now a paranormal investigator that tries to disprove miracles. Only now she may have found one that means the end of the world.
I think God has sent me a message.
What happened?
Catherine, you're gonna think I'm crazy. He wants me to warn you. I believe you're in danger.
Catherine, this is Doug Blackwell.
Professor, I'm from a place called Haven. I'm hoping you can help us with our problem. Folks are worried that this is a plague.
As an Old Testament plague? I've investigated 48 miraculous occurrences with 48 scientific explanations.
I understand you're not much of a Bible reader. Some folks just don't want to go to heaven.
There's things going on now. You just better prepare yourself.
Is it blood?
The whole damn river.
The folks in town think there might be 9 more plagues on the way.
You're in great danger. Everyone is.
Catherine, what are you doing?
Ending this.
All right, The Reaping was written by Carrie and Chad Hayes. It was directed by Stephen Hopkins, who also directed The Ghost in the Darkness, Predator 2, and A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Child. It stars Hilary Swank, who was in 1999's Boys Don't Cry, 2002's Insomnia, and 2004's Million Dollar Baby. With her is David Morrissey, who was in 1998's Hillary and Jackie, 2009's Red Riding, in the year of Our Lord, 1974. I don't even want to know what that movie is about. but currently plays the governor on AMC's The Walking Dead. And rounding things out, we have Anna Sophia Robb, who was in 2005's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, 2007's Bridge to Terabithia, and 2008's Jumper.
And produced by, among other people, Joel Silver and Robert Zemeckis.
Yes. So, where notes.
Where to begin, right? Well, I want to begin with, am I the only one that watched this movie and kept finding comparisons to what to The Walking Dead?
Actually, maybe, because I don't think I really paid attention enough to compare it to The Walking Dead. I was being thrown too much by how much Hilary Swank sucks at acting.
You got a problem with
that? Yeah, I didn't catch the Walking Dead connection, but I kept thinking this is Rosemary's Baby meets Last Exorcism.
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe I was a little bit too, you know, I've been watching him as the governor, too.
It could be.
You know, too much. But I kept making comments as I was watching the film. I was like, oh, there's the governor. He even sounds like the governor. Hey, he even looks like the governor. And then when you're like watching this movie and you know damn well that because we've seen him as the governor, there's nothing specifically good about this guy, even though he comes off kind of non-assuming. And then there was I kept waiting for Penny to show up, especially when he was telling stories about his daughter or about his wife anyway, and all that other stuff. So it was like, it felt very Woodbury to me. The whole town did.
Well, the whole town was basically, you know, they were such Bible thumpers in this film that you could tell the whole setup of the film right from the get-go, right from the very beginning when they, you know, tried to give the backstory on Swank's character, which I don't really feel like looking up her name right now, Catherine. You know, right from the beginning, you know, it starts off with her, you know, basically doing, you know, investigation on a miracle that happens, only to pull back and show that it was actually a presentation of an investigation that she did, where she found that everything that was happening was because of toxins being dumped into some giant oil well thing and an earthquake and all this stuff. So, I mean, that was a whole setup. And it was such a contrived storyline that you knew that the only thing that could happen is at the end that, you know, this is her. I'm going to find the one thing that I can't explain scientifically.
I don't know if that was her mission, was to find the one thing she can't explain scientifically.
No, but you knew that was what was going to happen in the film.
Right. And you know, I think it's fun to point out that there really is a department in the Vatican whose sole job it is to disprove miracles.
Yes.
Which is a fun little.
And they talked about that in the movie. What's the one with where she has like sores on her hands and.
Stigmata. Oh, yeah, and stigmata.
Stigmata, that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
And they talked about that, where about the Vatican and how they have them, you know, where they're actual scientists, but they're also priests, mm-hmm. which is, you know, kind of seems oxymoronish to me, but I guess it works out.
Hey, it's a church. They can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, that's true, too. Anybody that we offend from this, get over it.
So, well, I think it was a horrible movie, but I'll let you go. I'll let you go with your ideas first.
That's really about it. Morrissey, I will admit, was one of the main redeeming factors in this. The only other thing that I really know him from is The Governor. And I know I've seen this movie before, but didn't put the two together. He was actually really good in this movie. I thought he did great as this, and I didn't see him at all as The Governor like you did.
Now, well, see,
what we found out at the end, he felt very governor-like looking back. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I didn't go like what you were saying earlier as far as, you know, I kept seeing The Walking Dead or whatever because I didn't. But as soon as he walked on, you know, the first time he, you know, showed up, it's like, oh, it's the governor. And I guess for me, it was like, because I've only seen him in The Walking Dead and this. And I had never seen this movie before, even though my wife had, and she's like, God, you're going to hate this movie. all I saw was the governor. I mean, it was the same speech patterns. It was the same tone of voice. And I get that, you know, they were from the South and, you know, that's where both The Walking Dead and this movie take place. But it's like, you know, not that he's a terrible actor, but it just seems like he's kind of a one-trick pony.
Yeah, I'll buy that, that he was more or less playing the same character, only in a different circumstance.
Right.
Okay.
So it'd be like the governor pre...
pre-governor?
The governor we know would be, yeah, pre-governor. Yeah.
Governor, well, in fact, pre-government.
I kept, you know, when he, you know, even in the trailer, as I'm listening to it, as you're playing it, you know, he's like, we're from a small town. I know he's saying Haven, but I kept waiting for him to say, you know, Woodbury.
Yeah. And isn't it always Haven?
Yes.
Well, isn't it? That's a show on Sci-Fi right now that's also based on Stephen King's books. Doesn't he put a lot of stuff in Haven?
That I think that's the only one.
Is it?
Yeah. He's got a couple of fictional towns.
He usually goes with Castle Rock or somewhere.
Castle Rock is the big one. That's where a lot of stuff happens, for everything from Cujo to...
But it seems like every movie you see that involves like twisted religious people it happens in a small town called Haven.
I think that's a Hollywood, you know, stereotype, I guess. I don't know. I was looking for a different word, but you know,
yeah. as much as I hate to admit it, I actually have a script idea that takes place in a town called Haven as well. As religious people involved. Go figure.
All right. So back to the plagues, though. You know, the main thing that this really centers around is the plagues that, you know, came down on the Egyptians.
I think they came down on the Egyptians. Yeah. During Old Testament. Yeah.
Yeah, and so for being the end of the world and all this stuff, and it's supposedly, if you know, for people that actually read the Bible, they know that it was Moses and God that brought the seven plagues down on the Egyptians and stuff like that. And in this one, it's one of them where you're watching this and you're going, okay, I get it. I get the frogs. I get the blood. Everything like that. I go, but at the same time, I'm like, but what's the motivation? Why would they be doing it again?
That's a good question. That's what I was actually asking, is why is this happening a second time, though? Because the first time, you know, God was getting vengeance. God and Moses were getting vengeance on the Egyptians.
It wasn't even so much vengeance. It was the fact that they were basically taking whatever the Egyptians said couldn't happen, and they were saying, "Yeah, I'll prove it to you." And
because the Hebrews couldn't leave, though.
Right? Yeah, that's what I mean. And so it wasn't vengeance. It was, you know, basically trying to force their hand to get them to leave. But yeah, the second time, you know, as you watch this, you're going, "Well, this is supposed to be, you know, the apocalypse." Wouldn't, you know, like the Four Horsemen stuff make more sense?
Well, they did kind of explain it, and I can't remember which. I think it may have been
the two explanations, actually. I mean, there was the one that was actually given, and then there's the one you find out about in the end. But
well, yeah, it's still,
I think the priest, when she was talking to him on the phone,
explained. Yeah, you know, the fact that, you know, well, what I was going with was, you know, and maybe it was the priest that said it, but basically, at one point, someone says that, you know, it could be the devil himself doing it because he often mocks what God does.
Yeah.
But then, you know,
he uses it as protection because one of the children was supposed to be the, you know, the Antichrist.
Right.
Right. And that's why all this was happening in this town.
Right. And in reality, as we find out in the movie, is that really what the plagues are still being caused by God.
Right. Well, and then, like I said, you know, it leads you to believe that the little girl is the, you know, the harbinger of the apocalypse.
Right.
And there, you know, I don't want to give anything too much away, but there was the scene where she's dreaming that she had sex with the governor or whatever. It was straight out of Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, how come I've never had visions while screwing? Yet I always watch movies.
You're just doing it wrong.
I must be. Have you guys ever had sex so good that you were actually having biblical visions?
It's because we weren't chosen.
Oh.
And the other part is that the sex was part of the vision because she didn't really know she actually did it.
Right. Not until, you know, yeah. The end.
because she thought it was just a dream. So she had a dream with biblical, with a dream about sex with biblical visions.
You know, there's also certain things that can go into a person's drink that can do that also.
Right. Well, and in
hey,
her,
man, why you got to give that stuff away? Yeah. Now I'm not going to get a date this weekend.
But you do have your one man play going on, so just you know, invite people to that or try to get some groupies afterwards.
And it's like having multiple dates.
All right. Overall, I really don't have a lot because this is such a contrived film. So overall, I'm going to jump right to my stabs because I would have a list of I have a list of dislikes that are so long that I give this two stabs. For having a almost decent Old Testament storyline with a great performance by Morrissey, but is knocked way down with having Swank in the lead role.
Yeah, and see, I'm going to go with you on that. You know, I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5 myself because I honestly felt like, you know, I was watching two different movies. You know, the first part, you know, everything is being or trying to be explained by science. And I just felt if they had towards the end, when the last couple of plagues start happening, it was like they switched to a whole different mode. It's like, because before it was scientific and it was subtle and it's like, well, it could be blood, but it might not be blood. And then, you know, the frogs and everything. And then bam, you know, even with the locusts, you know, that was like, but then when we got the darkness and the fire out of the sky, I was like, I felt like I was watching a completely different movie. And you know, like I said, I like the guy who plays the governor, Morrissey. But I felt like I was watching the governor. So, yeah, 2 out of 5 for me as well.
Okay. Well, for Rosemary's Exorcism, I'm going to say, I'm going to go about a 2.5 because I thought the story was a little interesting. I liked the scientific aspect. Of course, the only part that I really, really liked about the science, because they didn't really do a good job with science other than when she explained how the original plague, you know, scientifically, how they figure the original plague during, you know, Moses' time actually happened.
Right.
that I found very interesting.
And that's true. I've actually watched quite a few documentaries that basically say the same thing that she did.
Right. And in the meantime, though, I have to agree with Mike that, you know, I as much as I like David Morrissey, he could have been the governor still. I mean, in this one. And the little twist at the end was kind of like it wasn't even a good twist because you should have been able to figure that out. I mean, the plagues were not a way to protect the Antichrist. The plagues were God's vengeance upon the Egyptians for not letting his people go. And that's what, if they ever got brought up again, that would be what they'd be used for.
Right.
Or something similar.
Right. All right. And I think with that, I hit the wrong button, but let's head over to Captain Creeper's Book Corner.
And we talked about this last week. We got to come up with some different music. You play the same thing for each of us, and you know, there's got to be more free music out there for different intros. Just saying.
I'm sure I have.
All right. So the first thing I want to talk about, and I called it a disclaimer. Jeff says it's a declaration. We're going to agree to disagree. I just have a little blurb before I actually do my book review. First of all, I want to thank you guys, Jeff and Jason, for bringing me into the fold at Creepercast and for letting me carve out my own little niche here with my book corner. Now, I haven't gotten any real reviews from the fans, so I don't know if you like it or dislike it, but I'm going to do it this way until I hear something else. Now that you've noticed, we try and do a theme here every week with our movies, even if we don't understand the theme ourselves, and we're going to blame that one on Jeff. And while Jeff and Jason have assured me that my book reviews don't have to go along with the movie theme, I figure if I've read something that fits, why not go ahead and keep it a thing? Anyway, the point of this is when we decided to add my book corner here to the show, I didn't have a lot of prep time, and I certainly not enough time to go back and reread everything that I have ever read and write reviews for them, as well as read new stuff, too. So I've been writing my reviews as I finish new books, but some of them are 9th or 12th in a book series, and I don't want to jump in with those until I've reviewed the earlier books. I'll get to them eventually. So that being said, when I do my reviews, oftentimes I have to rely solely on my memory and what I can dig up on Amazon and, God forbid, Wikipedia. So if my reviews don't gel with your recollection of a given book, just let me know, and I'll do my best to reread it and be as fair and honest as I can. And honestly, I'm doing the best I can, considering I never thought I'd be writing anything ever again after college. Now that that's out of the way, I do have one more thing to mention. What was that?
So see what you get for thinking.
Yeah, I know. My wife tells me that all the time. So anyway, one more thing before we get to this week's book corner. If there's a book that you guys would like me to review, leave us a comment or on our page or whatever. If you have your own book and want to know what I think of it, send us a copy, and it goes to the top of the list. We've already had two authors, Dean Scurlock, who we are still trying to work out to get on our show, and his book. I've done that review, and I'm working on another one. I will say this. I'm not going to promise to say that I like a book, but I will be honest with my review. So now that that's all been said and done, on to this week's Captain Creeper's Book Corner. Going with our theme this week, the movies we're doing this week are two completely different movies, so I kind of had to go with something that I had read, and I was actually hoping we would review Signal first, so we didn't, but here we go. This week's book review is Cell by Stephen King. I couldn't get an accurate page count because I three different listings on three different websites gave me three different page numbers. So it's about 300, 400 pages. It's your average Stephen King book. And it was published in November of 2006. The basic plot, and I got this off of Amazon, where were you on October 1st at 3:03 p.m.? Graphic artist Clay Riddle was in the heart of Boston on that brilliant autumn afternoon when hell was unleashed before his eyes. Without warning, carnage and chaos reigned. Ordinary people fell victim to the basest, most animalistic destruction, and the apocalypse began with the ring of a cell phone. Our story follows a New England artist struggling to reunite with his young son after a mysterious signal broadcast over the global cell phone network turns the majority of his fellow humans into mindless, vicious animals. As anyone who has listened to me and my partner here will know, that I am a huge Stephen King fan. I've read most of his stuff. Hell, his was the first novel I ever read and what got me reading back in the day. That being said, just because I'm a fan doesn't mean I like all of King's books or think that he can do no wrong when writing. He's got more hits than misses, but unfortunately, this book belongs in the latter category for me. I like the premise of the pulse coming through the cell phones and driving everyone crazy. And I'm not sure if King was the first to come up with this idea, but I'm pretty sure it's the first time I came across it. The problem comes from different areas. The pulse is never really explained, and it's not just one pulse that affects people who are listening at that moment. It's a continuous thing anytime someone tries to use the phone, even when society and civilization start to crumble. So how does the pulse keep going? Then they say that after the initial pulse, the continuing signal is now corrupted and doesn't have the exact same effect. So what happened to corrupt it? The characters seem to be reused versions of other characters from other books, including the Raggedy Man, who seems to be just the latest stand-in for King's other boogeymen. Example, Randall Flagg from The Stand or the Dark Tower series. And also somehow the signal not only makes people homicidal maniacs, but then ties them to a psychic hive mind. There's not a lot that makes sense in this book, to be honest. This was one of the first books King's released after his announced retirement back in the 2000s. And frankly, it feels like he wrote it for the paycheck. It has his usual style and wordiness, so it's not a total waste, but I doubt I will ever reread this one. If you're a King fan like me and you feel the need to read this book, my recommendation my recommendation is to get it from your library if they have it, unless you're a diehard fan and you got to have everything he's ever written on your bookshelf. Though this is going to be a first. I'm giving a 2 out of 5 for a Stephen King novel. It's available in hardcover, paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And that is this week's Captain Creeper's Book Corner.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike.
All right. And I like the little diatribe at the beginning. You know, that has to, I want to say, though, with that, that kind of goes with everything that we do, is that, you know, if we make a mistake, or you, you know, want to let us know about something that you didn't like that we said, or you didn't like our reviews, hey, you know what? You're more than welcome to have your voice heard, and we would love to hear from you by simply calling the listener feedback hotline at 503-454-6941, or heading over to our website and leaving a comment at below the episode page. So for this one, it'll be creepercast.com/104, and leave a comment. You know, that's a great way to let anybody else know if you hear or saw a mistake, or if you just you know, want to point something out that maybe we didn't cover.
Right, right. I mean, I'm not saying only do it for Captain Creeper's Book Corner, because I'm awesome, and you know, it's for but all of us. Are. But I am awesome. You know, I mean, that's what, you know, she was saying the other night. You know, but whatever. Okay, that went to a weird place. Let's go on.
let's head over to see what's going on in TV this week. All right, this week in TV news, The Walking Dead is on its usual mid-season hiatus, and it's hard for any fan of the show to take a break. But fear not, my friends, the CreeperCast is here to help that void. Where did that come from?
Yeah. that was kind of cool, though, because you void.
And... all right, I lost my spot. Fear not, the CreeperCast here to help that void. We will be looking back at the beginning of Season 3 with the first half of the season. You'll also get a dose of survival know-how when we get the boys, Mike and Matt, from the Evolution of the Apocalypse on the show to give their tips, plus mine, on how to survive based on what we saw from the beginning of this season. Speaking of the season... it is the mid-season finale, and in the last episode, we met a few new faces, and we also saw some, well, one kind of familiar one, kind of, die off. The episode opened with Tyrese and his gang hacking their way through the woods, trying to find a safe place to regroup. And, you know, as our own Captain Creeper Mike put it, it was kind of like watching an alternative universe, or something like that. I think that's what he said.
Actually, I think it was Jeff who said that, but that's okay.
Yeah, I thought it was you, but yes. They finally reached the prison with walkers hot on their tails, only to be saved by who other than Carl, who acts more and more like Rick every episode, i.e. he saved their butts, but then, you know, locks them up for his own safety. Rick, Daryl, Michonne, and Oscar infiltrate Woodbury to save Glenn and Maggie from the clutches of Merle and the governor. Michonne takes off to the governor's house to wait for his arrival and discover the secret heads and his dead daughter in the back room. By the way, she offs the daughter, spoiler alert, after the fact. The rescue attempt went about as well as you would expect for a small group of non-Navy SEALs with nothing more than a few pistols and some tear gas. They got their objective, but left Daryl behind in the wake. Don't discount Maggie and Glenn either. They did awesome in this episode. After snapping an arm off of the walker Glenn took out with his hands literally taped to a chair, Maggie used the dismembered digit to stab Woodbury's Warren in the neck. What is with me and alliterations today? It was gruesome and awesome at the same time. I love you, Maggie. The writers also give us the governor from the comic, as in the patch on his eye, thanks to Michonne using a piece of glass to delicately penetrate, or should I say undelicately penetrate, his eye hole. So what's coming up in February when The Walking Dead returns? AMC thankfully gives us some teasers to keep our love for the undead alive. Here is what has been released so far.
AMC's The Walking Dead returns with new episodes this February.
The whole town is out on the street.
You and I could end this tonight.
I need to go see them. He's gone.
I'm not sure where her loyalty lies.
What the hell is he doing?
You should stop.
Stop what?
Meeting the leader.
AMC's The Walking Dead returns this February.
Get back here!
For a longer look, go to amctv.com.
Let him go. Philip!
Stay out of this.
He's my friend.
It's not up to me anymore. The people have spoken.
What? The Walking Dead Season 3 continues with new episodes in February, only on AMC.
So, Daryl and Merle, yes, they will fight to the death. I doubt they will die. Maybe Merle. But they will fight to the death.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
Yes. Which is how it should be.
Exactly.
Elsewhere on TV, ABC tries their hand again at Supernatural TV. Mind you, with the exception of Lost, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, the Disney-run network doesn't really have a good track record of keeping spooky shows alive. 666 Park Avenue. Deadline reports that ABC has ordered 13 episodes of an X-Files-ish new series called Weird Desk. According to Deadline,
based on the alleged real-life mysteries from this world and beyond, it centers on the workings of a clandestine organization rumored to be named Weird Desk, working above the levels of top secret and above the office of the president. The unit is the destination for mysterious intelligence rerouted from the CIA and NSA. Tasked with investigating and solving occurrences of the paranormal, supernatural, and sometimes extraterrestrial, Weird Desk is led by Morgan, an obstinate, socially inept and brilliant man who would now be dead if it weren't for his special forces trained partner, Rosetta.
So basically, it's X-Files.
Thank you, Al 2000.
Yeah, no kidding. I was like, he turned it to AI on us.
So basically, it's X-Files with a nerdier Mulder and an ass-kicking Scully.
I just got to say, my GPS had more emotion than that.
Canadian production company Shaftesbury will produce the series, which is set to premiere sometime on ABC in the summer of 2013. You can expect casting news shortly after the new year. And now for my speculation. Weird Desk won't even make it 6 episodes before Disney pulls the plug. And that's what happened this week in TV news.
Speaking of TV news and 666 Park Avenue, I know you guys watch the show. I watch the show. They canceled the show. I get that. And I'm upset about that. But we were promised, you know, the full 13 episode run. Yet they still aired the mid-season finale. Am I the only one who thinks it's never going to finish running? You know, the final 6 or 7 episodes, we're never going to see those until it comes out on DVD.
More importantly, are you the only one that wouldn't expect a network to lie to you?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Wait, the network lies? What?
Yeah, exactly.
I am so disillusioned at this point in my life, I don't know if I can go on.
I don't want to be hearing gunshots. Calm down.
One word, Firefly.
Yeah.
Bastards.
Any expectations about networks should end with that.
All right, how about we head over to Jeff's news?
All right, this week I'm doing something a little different. You know how I normally try to throw in some films to talk about? Well, this time around, I decided to talk about actual news. No, that's not entirely true. There are a couple of things that are actual news items, though, that I'm sure at least one of them is one that I'm really looking forward to having Jason's commentary on, or at least argument with me on. Well, he's not going to argue because of what it's about. Anyway, we're going to start off with Walking Dead stuff because, as Jason said, we are still doing the Walking Dead Week in Review, where we will go in depth and personal with every item of every episode we've seen thus far. Speaking of in depth to the Walking Dead, let's look at National Post's article that is discovered that I've already linked on Facebook that will, of course, be linked to the site when the news is posted. While AMC lets the Walking Dead gang take a short mid-season break, the Post's Andrew Bauer and Richard Johnson look at a few of the key statistics of 2.5 seasons worth of undead mayhem. They find noteworthy the gradual increase in the body count, the increasingly creative means of zombie dispatch, and the fact that every character seems to have developed a clear enjoyment for putting the ambulatory cadavers down for good. This is actually proof that there are people in this world that are much more geeky about The Walking Dead than we are. These yeah. guys have counted every kill and who did them, how they were done by, you know, who it was done by, all 2.5 seasons worth. But it is a fun place for us to be able to go back and go, let's see, let's do a quick look at Rick's zombie find, Rick's total up to this point. Oh, it's not working right now.
That makes for such good radio.
I know, doesn't it, though? Actually, I haven't actually figured out how to navigate this site yet, but apparently the biggest, you know, obviously the most kills have been done with guns. Did you know that Daryl's only actually killed 18 walkers with his crossbow?
Really?
Yeah. It seems like so many more because he does it so well. But he only gets 18 kill credits for his crossbow. But these are the things you can find out on this site. It's a fun site to look at. And we will, of course, be referring to it often on the Walking Dead Week in Review. And at the beginning of the show, you heard the Australian Prime Minister give her end of the world address. They claim it was all a joke. I think it was real. We need our friend. We need our Australian friend, Killer Wilbur, to confirm whether or not this is entirely true. I love the fact that she mentioned that it does, you know, that it doesn't matter if it's going to be, you know, zombies or inbred hill creatures, and things to that effect. And my special thing is that when she ends it with, so basically by saying good luck, you're on your own. See ya. That was a good time. But anyway, supposedly she's joking about saying that the Mayans were right. The end of the world is coming. Newsflash, everybody. The Mayans never said the end of the world was coming. They just quit making the calendar.
They gave up. They're like, this is too big and too long.
Oh, please. They've done it for over 2,000 years. Don't you think that one of them was finally going, hey, do you think 2,000 years from now, but they might get the idea of how to do this? and then got done doing it. I mean, that's my opinion. The little bit of movie news that I do have for you is congratulations to our friends Mike and Matt at the Evolution of the Apocalypse podcast, because they will be talking to our good friend Bill Oberst Jr. You must listen to this show. Those guys are great, and I know they're going to have as much of a kick talking to Bill as we are, and they're going to get some new information because a lot of cool stuff has happened in Bill's life recently. One of them is Take This Lollipop is getting a sequel. In fact, you can help make this sequel.
You can.
Yeah, you can. No, I mean literally. Not as in like it's your Facebook that he's stalking you through. It's in like you can give some money so he can stalk you. And everybody wants to pay for Bill Oberst to stalk them. I think. They should.
Yes.
You pay me, I'll stalk you. Hell, but some of you, you don't even have to pay me. I'm just working on it on my own, you know? Just, you know what I'm saying?
Take This Lollipop 2 they want to have done by Halloween next year. The Kickstarter campaign is available out there. We will, of course, have links. And, I mean, they have a really good point out here. I mean, 13 million people liked the original one. If you're not one of them, you're not part of the you're not one of the cool kids. So make yourself one of them.
I have been freaking out everyone I know with Take This Lollipop.
I've been doing the same type of thing. But, but yeah, it'll be great. And Bill is working on, like, tons of great stuff right now. We're hoping to talk to him as well in the next few weeks, when we will be diving into a recut of a film he did from 2010. And last but not least in the news, and this is the one that I need Jason's input because Jason's worried about, you know, wasteful government spending. Well, speaking of wasteful government spending, is this wasteful? Because when it comes to a dilemma of government spending, zombie apocalypse hasn't really been discussed until now. In his latest report on government waste, Safety at Any Price Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma, yeah, where you are, Mike.
Yeah, I actually saw this on the news.
argued the Homeland Security funds allocated after 9/11 to shore up the U.S. anti-terrorism defense are being misused. He pointed to a five-day counterterrorism summit that included a zombie apocalypse demonstration.
It's never wasteful spending when zombies are involved. You have to prepare or else you'll be dead.
See, and ironically, I'm hoping he's the first one eaten. You know, and as he's being eaten, that look of recognition on his face going, I was so wrong!
And we should know in the next couple of weeks, right?
Well, if the end of the world will be by zombies. I have a strong feeling it eventually will be, but we don't know necessarily that it will be in the next couple weeks. The next couple weeks may just be the beginnings of it.
That's true. And like this article ends with saying is, but then again, can you ever be too prepared for the zombie apocalypse? And you'll have to see the video of the actual tactical training that they do. It's freaking glorious, and it will be on the website at creepercast.com, where you can also comment and tell us how awesome you think this video is, and that our government is spending something like $9 billion, and a good portion of it in the last year has gone to zombie apocalypse training.
So really, in all of their spending, $9 billion, that's like, what, 0.0001% of the budget going. I think that's money well spent when it comes to zombies. The only thing I would suggest is you need to have the civilian population learn zombie defense, not just the government, because the government will be gone.
Very good. Very good.
You know, I'm thinking they need to do more of this, not just zombie apocalypse, you know, because, you know, that's just in the news now, and people are getting into
it. Robots. Right, robots. We gotta
prepare for robots. Exactly, because I am fully prepared to welcome our robot overlords at this point, because I don't have the training to survive.
Yeah. Well, you know, and with the drones and stuff that's going on, you know, it's only a matter of time before Skynet becomes self-aware. Yeah.
Well, and Skynet is already, like, working at top. They're not calling it Skynet, but we know it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say, my cell phone, I try and turn it off, it turns itself back on. So, you know.
Yeah, it's called Siri now. All right. One thing that I want to touch on, I found this out. This comes from NBC New York. And I'm going to read right from their page because I like to plagiarize like that. And as they put it, a Long Island man has been arrested for allegedly shooting his girlfriend during a heated argument over the television show The Walking Dead.
I saw that.
Jared Gurman, 26, was charged with attempted murder after shooting his girlfriend with a .22 caliber rifle at his Williamston Park home early Monday morning. The unidentified woman suffered a pierced lung, shattered rib, and pierced diaphragm. She is in stable condition. According to Nassau County Police, Gurman was out with his girlfriend when the two began arguing over The Walking Dead, a television cable drama about a man who wakes up from a coma.
We know what the show is about.
Yeah, I know.
Do you really need to read that?
Well, it's not like I can read ahead. I'm not that smart.
Oh, that's right. We forgot you don't read.
Carry on.
Anyway, Gurman apparently felt strongly that a military mishap would occur in real life as it did on the show. He felt very adamant. Detective Raymond Coates said at a news conference Tuesday, according to him, there could be a military mishap that would result in some sort of virus being released that would cause terrible things to happen. The argument became so heated that the woman decided she didn't want to spend the night with Gurman and would drop him off at his home. She felt ridiculous, said Coates. He's passionate about it, and it escalated to the point it did. After she brought Gurman home, he continued to argue with her by text message. The dialogue became so angry and bitter, according to police, that the woman felt compelled to return to his home to check on him. When she arrived at about 2:30 a.m., she found him outside the door with a .22 caliber rifle. She tried to defuse the situation to calm him down. She was walking up the stairs when Mr. Gurman raised the rifle, pointed it at her, and fired one round into her back, causing serious injury. The woman pleaded with Gurman for help, and he brought her to a hospital to be treated, police said. Gurman initially told police the shooting was accidental, but later admitted it was not. The couple had been dating for about 3.5 to 4 years. According to Coate, Gurman had 3 long guns in his home, which have since been seized, and was described by police as passionate about weapons. I honestly don't know how to follow that up.
So. Where do you begin? Well, first of all, his first mistake was is that he should have said he thought she was a zombie.
Yeah, but
see,
even
that's what was going on in my head. I'm like, he should have just said, I thought she was a walker.
Yeah.
But then why did he shoot her in the chest?
Right. There is that problem.
I thought you said she...
Well, the back.
He shot her in the back.
Yeah. Back chest. Back.
Maybe she was trying to run at that point. I don't know. Maybe they left out that part of her trying to run away. That is a little bit too passionate about an argument. But... about that type of an argument at this point.
So the question is, will the military be the ones to create the zombie apocalypse? You let us know by leaving us a message at 503-454-6941. Or go onto our website at creepercast.com and leave us a message. You can also go to creepercast.com/feedback and speak directly into our SpeakPipe account, which we will then get and pipe it into the podcast.
Like we did with KC last week.
Like Jeff did with KC last week.
Speaking of people who do like zombie like things and start killing each other for no reason, let's talk about The Signal.
I think that is a great idea.
Not a great segue, but we'll go with it.
The Signal. Here's the plot. How would you describe your worst day ever? Try waking up to a TV signal that turns everyone into crazy. Murderous, crazy people. Yes, that's what I said.
Crazy, crazy people, yes.
Why? We could leave Terminus tomorrow. We could. Go down to the station, we'll get on a train, and we'll get in our own private compartment. We'll go to the country and start a life. And you don't look back.
It's beautiful.
It's possible.
I have to go.
I turned the TV on and there it was.
It's happening everywhere. All of Terminus.
That TV got in your brain and has distorted your perception. What's the matter with you?
Why are you looking at me like that? Stop it.
People are going crazy in their head all over.
You have crazy!
One out of 2 people just started killing each other. They just decided to kill people.
A broadcast on that scale could cause mass psychosis.
The girl in the car wreck outside, did you see her? Did you see where she went?
She was going to find you.
She might have received this cancer signal. She might have transmitted it on television.
Everybody's a suspect right now. Everyone.
It's a lie. A trick.
And no one can leave the Terminus.
All right.
Hold on a second. It's got a transmission. It's telling me to kill everybody.
That's fine because I'm like 3,000 miles away from you, so I'm okay with that.
First thing I want to say about this movie was recommended to us by my friend Nick through our webpage, our Facebook page.
And I actually want to thank him for it.
Yeah, I do too. Thank
I very
you.
Much enjoyed this.
So it was written by David Brunker, or Bruckner, I'm sorry. Written and directed by him, who also made a segment for one of Jeff's new favorite films, VHS. It stars.
And he also was the director of Sinister, which made my number 2 on my top 5.
Really? I didn't see that when I looked him up. Oh.
Pretty sure he directed. Or I might have to double check that. I might be sounding really stupid right now, but it's one of my favorite segments of VHS.
It stars Anissa Ramsey, who was in 7 Days of Yellow in 2009, 2011's Rites of Spring and 2011's Footloose, two of which I haven't heard of. The third one, I don't want to watch. We have Justin Welborn, who was in 2008's Dance of the Dead, 2009's The Final Destination, and 2010's The Crazies, which is the first film me and Jeff ever talked about or reviewed on this podcast. You can go back and listen, but pay no attention to the quality.
Or the people talking. And I will take it back. It was Scott Derrickson who did Sinister.
And then we also have Scott Poitras, who was in 2005's Prayer from Pelham. Again, what's with all the alliteration today? 2012's What to Expect When You're Expecting, and 2013's Synchronicity. I'm going to assume all three of them were chick flicks.
Or we can hope by the title. Yeah, if a title gives anything away.
And the fact that I haven't seen or heard of any of them. All right. First off, I want to thank Scott for telling us about this, because this was an awesome film.
Did I say Scott? I misspoke. My friend Nick.
Or Nick. Nick. Thank you, Nick, for telling us about this film. This was certainly a hard film to follow, but an amazing film.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you on that one. I loved the three story segment.
I was watching a Tarantino film, honestly.
Yeah.
With the way it kind of jumped around, you know, time wise, but
yeah, well, and that's what
there was a lot of weird flashbacks, and because it would take us back to the beginning of things.
Well, or people would just be hallucinating.
Yeah.
And you couldn't, and so it was sometimes hard to tell when something was a hallucination, when it was a flashback, and when it was real. But I think that's what worked for this film. And that, you know, the thing is this is not a new idea. It's certainly, the idea of The Signal is not new, as Mike just pointed out with his book review. The idea that, you know, something is going to mess with your brain to make you go crazy, it has been around for a long time.
And of course it would be TV, because they've been warning about that ever since the 40s.
Well, and I'm going to quickly talk about that in a second. Yeah. And the idea of everybody around you going crazy and murderous isn't new, because, again, me and Jeff talked about that in the first film that we reviewed on this program called The Crazies, which was a remake of Romero's
Crazies.
So, I mean, even that's been around. So the whole idea for this film is not new. But what's great and what I love is the way that they did it with the flashbacks and with the seeing it from the Crazies' point of view rather than just the point of view of the people trying to survive.
Right. Yeah. And I like that it was a handoff story. I mean, you were basically handing off to three main characters,
which all tend to converge in and of each other.
Right. Exactly as you put it, they converge with each other and all of that. It made it much more fun as a watch. And I was going to say about the reason why I liked the way it was handled with three different directors. I mean, you got Bruckner handling the first half, and then the Dan Bush half, or, you know, third, we'll say, was fun, though, because it suddenly turned, you know, horror comedic.
Yeah, that second act, I, you know, it was like, wow, I just love the way it was handled, you know, I mean, and of course, you know,
all of a sudden, yeah.
Absolutely, my favorite kill of the whole movie is the girl that plunges the balloon filler into the guy's neck and actually pumps it.
I just like how they kept, in that second act, you know, the girl who shows up and just out of the blue, he clocks her with the extermination can or whatever, and just goes off, just
goes to town on her.
And then a couple minutes later, the one guy who seems relatively sane and calm, you know, she twitches and he grabs it and just starts going to town on her. And you know, I just love the fact that, you know, they're so calm about it. You know, well, they're obviously screwed up, but we're fine. And, you know, as watchers, we're going, no, you're just as screwed up as everybody else.
And then they're trying different ways to block the signal, putting tinfoil on the head, which is, you know, a thing that people with alien autopsy kind of go with.
was very popular in Signs, yes.
Yes, very popular.
Yeah, and see, and I get what she was trying to do, the main character, at the towards the end of the first segment, you know, by and bravo to the fact that, you know, they figured out so quickly that it was the radio and television. And she covers up her ears, you know, to listen to that mixed CD that her lover gives her. And, you know, I get what she was trying to do, but on the same token, you know, it shows you what happens because she doesn't hear the guy coming up behind her or whatever and grabs her. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I get you're trying to block the signal, but now you can't hear if someone's coming up behind you.
Or you could just keep turning around.
Yeah, keep looking around.
Now, you know, the one thing when watching this, and I'm going to deduct a point for my final with this, is that the whole idea of the signal coming through the TV and the radio and basically anything tech that receives a signal is was done in Joss Whedon's Dollhouse in the epilogue. It was the whole premise of the epilogue, is that everybody is crazy, and so you have to basically divorce yourself from all technology. Otherwise, you'll go crazy. And so that was the one thing that I kind of didn't like, because that part right there completely felt like it was a ripoff.
Hmm. See, and I haven't seen all – I've only seen one or two episodes of Dollhouse, so – I'm a
that
bad
was the first episode. So.
I'm a bad Joss Whedon fan.
I haven't seen the entire three. There's three seasons, right?
Two seasons. There's two seasons.
See the second season.
So it's on Netflix. So go on Netflix and watch it.
I do remember that premise. I just thought it was. I mean, kind of the way they explained it though later too. Though, like, what about that one dude that suddenly turned into like he knew everything about what was going on?
Yes.
And he kind of explains it all, not that we understand half of what he said.
Part of it made you wonder if he was making the whole thing up.
Yeah.
Well, and what the only other thing that really kind of bothered me about, you know, this film, and going back to the female lead, excuse me, in the first segment, she's, like I said, trying to block the sound. First, because she realizes that, you know, it's coming from the television and radio. Well, then she hooks up with her, you know, her husband's friend, the black guy. And I don't remember his name, who is obviously and they kind of show this throughout, you know, the signal affects people different ways. You know, the one chick, you know, still obsessively planning her party, even though she killed her husband. And the black guy is like, you know, paranoid. But he doesn't get violent until he turns on the radio in the car. Now, my problem is she's right there with him, and this happens on several occasions where she's exposed to the signal, but it doesn't seem to affect her. Why not?
Different makeup of people. I just put it that it affects people differently, and so yeah, what affects him one at all may not affect her at all, you know?
Which is what happened with the rest of the characters as well. I mean, you had the one guy who didn't get homicidal. He just got smarter.
Yeah.
Right. And I get that it affected different people in different ways. I guess it didn't occur to me that one of the ways that it would affect people is by not affecting them.
Yeah. You're just immune to it.
I don't think it was actually immunity with her though. It was more, she had more the flight response. Everybody else was getting it, you know, was fight and homicidal maniac and all this other stuff where she was like, get the hell out of here. And so it kind of that was the way it affected her was.
You know. So what you're saying is the signal affects your sympathetic nervous system.
Yeah. Well, that's basically what the guy was explaining when he, you know, when he gave his quick little tirade. I mean, I need to watch it again to actually understand what he said 100%. But what he was saying is that usually the television, you know, television signals are set up a certain way and they have he felt that that they had a filter on them to stop certain types of things from affecting our brains. And what happened is the filter went away. You know, something happened to the filter and now it was actually attacking people's brains, but it was attacking different parts of different people's brains.
Right. So, and that's been something that people thought when radio waves were first discovered,
right.
You know, back with Marconi and stuff. And there was this big, it's called moral panic, where people, you know, basically panic about stuff that, isn't really there, but somehow, you know, by passing it along in from word of mouth or through now email or stuff like that. They believe it to be true. Another type of moral panic that people had back then normally deals with technology. One of the other moral panics that people had back then, there was a few of them, was that women wouldn't be able to ride trains because the speed would cause their uteruses to pop out.
Ooh.
Yes. Okay. And then another one was that electricity would turn every guy into basically molesters, because now with being able to have such bright lights inside the house, you can see what's going on inside of a person's house from the road, and therefore you can tell when a woman is home and you'll be able to go in after her.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis of what the signal is. It's a moral panic movie by taking this idea that, you know, there is a filter. There really isn't. All the radio waves in the world are being bombarded to us as radiation, but they're normally so low that, you know, we can't perceive it.
That was his emotional trait, though, was to overanalyze things. And that's really, I'm actually, you know, now that I look at one of the plot outlines that I see here, this makes a lot of sense and kind of follows what I said before, is that what it does is it amplifies each person's negative emotional traits.
So if you're paranoid, you become more paranoid.
Yeah, you become more paranoid. If you're violent, you become more violent, which explains the husband.
Yes. Okay. And
things like that.
And if you're afraid and trying to get away from your husband, it's going to make you flee even faster and more.
Yes. So it makes a lot of sense in that turn. Look at it from those terms. But what I think is interesting about this film, and this is a Bruckner thing, is granted he usually does a lot of found footage type stuff, which is the film he did for VHS was found footage. He's mostly known for found footage type things. I've been wanting to see this one, so when Nick suggested it, I was more than happy to put it on the list, especially when I found out what it was about for sure. And but with this one, I appreciate the fact that it wasn't found footage. I mean, it had some elements,
kind of.
Which is why I thought it was Sinister. You know, he was the same guy who did Sinister, is because that film had a lot of elements of found footage. It just wasn't at all, other than that they literally found footage.
Speaking of found footage, though, the beginning of the film, did anybody turn on the film and first watch it and go, what the hell piece of 70s trash are we watching?
That was my first reaction, honest to God, when I'm like, what is this crap?
Yep, I did the same thing.
In
the first 5 minutes, I was like, crap.
Yeah, that's
what I'm like. Then when it got going, I'm like, whew.
Yeah, I was like, I was actually literally going to go to work the next, you know, when I watched it and punch Nick in the face. And then it got going. I'm like, okay, cool, you know. Wow.
So any last things before I give my stabs, because we're going over time right now?
No, in fact, anything else I have to say involves how many times I would stab people after watching this.
Well, speaking of stabs, I give this 4 stabs for being a very well-written, directed, and acted, under-the-radar, apocalyptic film that's sure to leave you wondering if the science behind it could really be true.
Well said. And I'm going to say, for a budget of $50,000 and shot in 13 days, if I'd have seen this film before I made my top 5 list, it probably would have knocked Sinister down a peg. I'm going to go 4 out of 5 as well.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Honestly, I like the film. I like the acting. Would I watch it again? Probably not. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. It's a solid entry. It didn't completely suck, you know, in the parlance of my rating system. So, yeah, it's a solid 3 out of 5 for me.
Excellent. And I think with that, it's time to start the music. All right. Remember to get a hold of us. Give us a call at 503-454-6941. Send us email at feedback@creepercast.com. You can also go to our SpeakPipe account by going to creepercast.com/feedback. I'm sorry. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast and on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. And Jeff, can you tell people what's going on next week? Should we all be around?
Well, we will be around next week since this show comes out Wednesday night, September 12th, so we have another week before the end of the world. And that's why we're going to hurry up and do our Christmas episode, because that way if the end of the world comes, we've already celebrated Christmas.
All right.
We will talk about The Saint from France, and we are going to talk about, from popular demand, by the way, we are going to get into Jack Frost from 1998. No, not the Michael Keaton film.
All right, Mike, any good books that you'll be reviewing?
Next week we have another compilation from Charlene Harris, and Tony Kellner. This one is entitled Wolf's Bane and Mistletoe.
All right. And with that, I will see you guys next week. Jeff, give your sign off.
Oh, that's not my sign off. All right, night.
Thought it was till next week, bleed.
Yeah, till next week, bleed.